Damages sustained. explain, well, then it's explained and also prospective damages, then that must be done in one claim because it flows from one cause of action. And the purpose of that, of course, is to prevent a multiplicity of actions based upon a single cause of action. The issue around medical legal claims is that the payments, both for past damages as well as prospective damages, must be paid in a lump sum. The South African Law Reform Commission then recommended, as an interim measure, recommended that the State Liabilities Act should be amended to address the issue. Thank you, so the bill itself, Mr. Chair, aims then to introduce structured settlements for the satisfaction of claims against the state. This is, of course, just to emphasize that the bill will be promoted as an interim measure pending the final outcome of the Law Reform Commission's final report. So clause 1 introduces a new solution then dealing with structured settlement of claims. The proposed new section 2, capital A sub 1, provides that the court must, in a successful claim against the state that exceeds R1 million, order that compensation be paid in terms of structured settlement, which may then provide for past expenses and damages, necessary immediate expenses, and then with regard to future costs, payment in the form of periodic payments. The proposed new section 2A sub 2 then provides that insofar as future costs, cost for future care and future medical treatment and future loss of earnings are concerned, the court must order the compensation for those costs be paid by way of periodic payments. Then paragraphs B and C make provision for those instances where the state can be ordered to provide treatment to injured parties. The provision is also made that the amount of periodic payments will then increase annually in accordance with the Consumer Price Index. And also provision is made that any party may make an application to the court for the variation of the periodic payment order if a substantial change in the condition or circumstances of the injured party necessitate such variation. We are also proposing that an amendment should be effected to Section 4 of the Act, which deals with the savings provision, and that is to ensure that, or to state clearly, that proceedings which have not been instituted or concluded prior to the commencement then of the new Section 2A must then be instituted and concluded in accordance with the new Section 2A. In short, Mr. Chair, that is then the State Liability Amendment Bill.
I'm not sure, Deputy Minister, do you have comments, additions?
There may be just, to highlight the main issue is it's to, because of all the claims for medical negligence against the Departments of Health, the 9 Departments of Health, particularly from, cerebral palsy, I think it is, which is caused by, or can be caused by problems at birth with the way the delivery is made. The health departments are having to pay up millions up front, and the bill then allows staggered payments for future medical expenses. There should be no problem for the applicant or the plaintiff in a claim. It probably would probably mean that attorneys get less money if they're getting paid a commission of the claim, because the actual total amount would not be determined until the person has finally passed away. So there may be some resistance, but that's where it's from, and it's to try and assist the health departments with their problem of having to pay millions up front.
Honourable members, we are politicians, not technicians. So I think that our starting point should not just be to amend things. We really need to get a situation analysis. Because here it is the Minister, National Minister of Health and Minister of Justice, who want an amendment to this act because there's a problem. But I don't think that this problem is represented by one event or two events. There must be a bigger problem. Why don't we also have a situation analysis? How much money has the Department of Health lost because of the defect in the law? How much money has the Department of Justice, because it's an interested money party, lost because of the defect in the law? Shouldn't we have a situation analysis which tells us that this law has not been properly constructed, and as a result, the state has lost so much, because that money that is lost comes from the fiscals, and that money was voted by this parliament. We have a responsibility to explain to the people of South Africa why so much money was lost because of a law that is defective. And actually, how efficient is this law commission? Then when there's a problem in the law, we have to ask the law commission, what are the time frames for the law commission to review these laws, to discover what the problems are? To whom is this law commission accountable? So I think transformation of the legal system means looking at the entire system, how efficiently it works, how timeously it works, because we cannot at all times be dealing with the after effects of things. I think this committee is entitled to know, when did this problem arise, how much money was lost because of the defect in the law. Right now we know that the president has issued a proclamation against the SIU because the state attorney has, there's a lot of corruption, 80 billion, if I'm not mistaken, I speak subject to correction. Has that loss in the state attorney's office to do with this as well? So the problem may be much bigger than just amending this thing and bringing about an amendment bill. So, honourable members, I just want to know why we are politicians. Why are we not given a situation analysis of the acts? How much was lost, and why was this not foreseen, and why could this not have been nipped in the bud for the past 10 years that we're sitting here calling ourselves a commission? So I think that unless I'm wrong, and I speak subject to correction, but I think we need more information. Maybe we need to review the entire act, not just amend one section to deal with an event. But that would be my take. But I think as politicians, we are not technicians, we must just fix little paragraphs there and there. We must have a holistic understanding of the problem. Honorable Mpumulwa.
No, I quite appreciate what you're saying, I hope that perhaps that information could come to us before we finalize this, if possible. We need to know that. We need to know that we are assisting, and then the consequences of our actions will be, we'll know exactly why we do it. But generally, I quite appreciate that it would be better for me to leave Parliament and go for practice, because I'm making billions of rands here on the Department of Health. So anyway, I just wanted to find out, is this to be retrospective? Is it going to start, the cases that are now in Parliament, or is it going to affect also those that the decision has been made already about them? Or are you just going to say those that will be after this bill becomes, this amendment becomes law? That is the question I wanted to say.
There's a document here that the researchers from Parliament made a research, and I don't know whether Parliament should do research for the Department, or Department must do its own research. What amount, I don't want to say, 1 million, 1 million. What is that figure?
What is that?
What is that? 247 million or thousand. What is this? The researchers, can you clarify us? Honorable, do you want to say something before they tell us about the figures?
Yes, Honorable Mola, who do you find to attract your attention in the United States? I'm just helping you.
Huh? Oh, okay. Let's first be clarified on the report. Who is clarifying us on the report? When who commissioned this report? Is it from the Department or from Parliament?
Chairperson, yeah, sorry. Those figures, it was actually in. It was. The figures in the table, Chairperson, were provided. It was a response from the Minister of Health to a parliamentary question. So those figures come from the Department of Health. It was asked
from the Department of Health.
Yes, in a response to a parliamentary question.
Oh, I see. And then it is the request. For the amendment was also came from the Minister of Justice. Now, where is the report from the Department of Justice?
Which report, Chairperson?
Regarding this, because they also have a problem.
The figures are from the Health Department. I don't. You'll have to ask the Justice Department, Chairperson.
Justice Minister, do you have anything from the Department?
Well, we are bringing this amendment at the request of Health. Okay. So the issue is relating to the health claims. We can provide more detail. I've just seen the reply now, which I think is it Gillian that was speaking? Yes. Has come from the Ministry of Health. We can give a more detailed response on that. Maybe just to say it's not money that's lost, okay? It is basically that, you were using the word money lost, it's basically staggering the payment. So the fact that currently the ministers or MECs for health have to pay up front, That's the situation. Now, what would happen is that they would then have to pay for the medical treatment annually. So it's nothing, no money being lost. The matter is with the Law Reform Commission for a longer-term evaluation. So this is really sort of an interim measure. Obviously, the problem is the question of the claims at health and why there are so many problems. It's particularly, as I said, relating to cerebral palsy, because I think that the delay in the delivery can cause cerebral palsy, and that then gets attributed to the doctor, but it also is linked to the access of records and things like that. And then maybe just quickly while I'm on the floor, Mr. Mpumlana's last issue, it's on the last page the proceedings resulting from wrongful medical treatment which have not been instituted or concluded prior to the commencement of Section 2A must be instituted, continued and concluded in accordance with the new section. So the case is already before the court that have not been concluded then would be in terms of the new Act. Obviously cases that have been finalised wouldn't. Am I correct there? Thank you.
But problems in the Department of Health must be solved by people who are in the Law Commission. How much understanding and empirical knowledge do people in the Law Commission know to be able to address these things adequately? Is there no way of getting the competent people who understand the medical side, and then we say for a longer term? I'm not even sure. Who sits in this Law Commission? Are they full-time? Are they part-time? Because this is an emergency. Because if you are not paying the medical people, they will not do the work, and the people will die. So this is a matter of serious emergency. It can be left outsourced to some people whose capacity, competence, we are not even sure about. Can we look into that matter?
Maybe just to say, as far as the Law Reform Commission, they have a task team. I don't know offhand the names of the experts on it, but it would be a task team specifically set up to investigate this issue of medical liability, comprising then of experts in the field, presumably both law and medicine. But we can give you the details of who's on that team.
I also want to know, let's suppose somebody now is, as the cases are here, I would imagine that if there is a mistake made by doctors or leaving a pair of scissors by wolf or something like that, that somebody needs to make a living. If you're saying that you want to pay only for it affecting the medical only, in other words, going to a doctor during a particular period, what about the lost earnings or something like that? Are they also part of this? Are you saying that I cannot, if for example you give me a lump sum, then I'm able to start a business or do something? Are you saying that is it only for medical treatment? I'm sorry, I have not read this. I didn't read all these papers. Maybe it's my fault. That what I want to find out is this thing only for receiving medical treatment on an ongoing basis only, not connected to the other money that you receive for.
No, thanks, Jefferson. I think next time we must see, if like today, the legal component of the Department of Health should have been maybe available here. I think the legal component of the Department for Health should have maybe present today to clear us from some clarity questions. And I also want an explanation maybe to be clear, because I think the structured settlement and the periodical payment orders, can we be told clearly for how long? Because just to say structured settlement is vague, because we don't know for how long are you going to structure this settlement. Is it 10 years, 15 years, or 50 years, or whatever? And I think, Chairperson, the root cause here is not about the payment. It's the negligent, wrongful medical treatment, which is like now the Minister of Health and his team, they're failing to manage the Department of Health. And because of that, now we must change the law to protect their laziness or to promote their wrongful medical treatment to our people. So, which is not fair at all, because we can't protect people continuously act negligently to the life of the people by even amending the law to protect them. I'll just go on and do wrongful thing, treatment, then we'll pay the people like this. So, like you said, Chairperson, that we don't know how much deep the expenditure of this wrongful medical treatment. We need more details so that we must check. And I also want to know the Department of Justice, what are they doing maybe to sensitize the health practitioners in the Department of Health? Do they have workshop to sensitize them how difficult it is for the government to end up with the consequences of paying their negligence? And what is, because if the Department of Health was here, we're going to ask what happened to the people who are causing this wrongful medical treatment. What are remedies to rectify that? Are we protecting them in order maybe for them to continue to with their shenanigans of putting the life of our people in danger? So I think, Chairperson, I can be cleared on that in time.
No, Honourable
Members, it's true. You know, we can have statistics thrown on us. This is just figures. We want the story behind the figures. And we want the people in the Department of Health to be part of us here to come and talk to these matters. And some of these matters may also involve criminal prosecution. Are the people being prosecuted for negligence? And then are we going to use Parliament to shield people from prosecution? And then Parliament must be party to cover up. We need a full story. We are Parliament. We are not here to cover up for anybody. Any other person saw it? Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Mutapo.
Push it closer.
No, I can't.
Okay, no, I think you push the chair.
Thank you, Chief. I was saying I'll raise three issues. The first one will be the rationale behind this amendment, proposed amendment. And the second issue is I went through this case law, Harris Liso, emanating from different provincial departments. And the one I looked into deeply is the one regarding to Wandile Zulu, the one of Gauteng Department of Social Development and Health. So what I would like to know is
emanating from all these cases, especially the Wandile Zulu case, what lessons have we learned from that in terms of this medical negligence? And again, the third issue is the issue of, it somehow relates to what honorable members and the chairperson have just said. What is the status quo as of now? What's happening in this regard? And maybe if you can just give us a full background, because some of the documents you have just got now, although we got electronic earlier on a day or 2 days before, yes. But maybe if you can just keep us posted, because how urgent and important will this amendment be and the status quo and the three issues I have raised. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mutapo, you are right. You know, if we could even get an audit of this court case, now you see you are talking about social development, which means it's not only health and justice. Which are these cases? What do we learn from those cases? What is the status quo now? So we really need background or situational analysis so that we root out the root cause, but not just dethroning figures, because this does not help us do anything. And otherwise, we are going to just make an amendment. Next day, we'll be making another amendment, and it will be the committee of amendments. Is there another hand?
I forgot something. There is a very important concept raised by our researchers, the Africanization of our common law. Maybe if the department can also comment on that, the issue raised by the Constitutional Court on some cases. Thank you.
What do you understand by Africanization?
The Africanization of common law. That's what the
Constitutional Court raised on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or in resolving these medical legal challenges, there should be Africanization of the common law. It was raised by the Constitutional Court. Maybe because the department is dealt much on these cases, they may give us a broader picture, Chairperson.
I'm happy you raised that, because we have said at the beginning of the term that all the time we've been talking about the transformation of the judiciary, and we think a great deal has been done in that regard. But we said that actually it's not just the transformation of the judiciary. We said is the transformation of the legal system. And when the courts talk about the Africanization of the common law, that relates to the transformation of the legal system. Because we are not a colony of Britain. We are an African state on the southern tip of the continent. The majority of the people here are Africans, and the legal system must reflect that we are an African people with African cultures, with African traditions, and so on. And we can't wait for the courts, being representatives of the people. We can't wait for the courts to tell us that the law must be Africanized. We should be the ones who start to Africanize the law. We are African. The majority of us are Africans. So this means that we need to go back to the issue of the transformation of the legal system. Where is a plan, Deputy Minister? We need a full plan on the transformation of the legal system, not the piecemeal transformation of the legal system. So can we have not now necessarily, but we are just saying this matter has now been raised by the court. We have been raising it in the House at the beginning of the term. Even now we have heard about legal renaissance, and that didn't even have much content as well. I don't know if it's going to, that legal renaissance is going to cover that issue of Africanization, but that issue is much broader than about just this case.
Chair, maybe if I can start with the response. I mean, firstly, the bill, well, firstly, I've just seen now the, what is it, and I don't think the people, the officials from the department, it's a 50-page document from the research unit on the bill, which looks very useful. It's dated yesterday. Unfortunately, we weren't given a copy of it, and maybe in future if we could get given a copy of it. So it would be, but it looks like they've done a lot of research on the issue. The bill is only about medical negligence. So it's if you look at the long title, to provide for the structured settlements for the satisfaction of claims against the state as a result of wrongful medical treatment by persons by servants of the state. So it's solely dealing with medical negligence. I think when it came to the common law, the issue was that the MEC for Health in Gauteng had tried to argue that getting rid of the once and for all principle could be done by the SCA, who had a duty to develop the common law, but they felt it they didn't agree with that, and that's provided, I think, in the documentation. But I think if Henk wants to add anything, we will provide then more. Well, we'll look at what can be supplemented, because I think there's a lot in what the research section have provided. And we can then supplement that and respond to some of the issues that they have raised. But through you, Chair, to Henk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair, maybe just to answer the questions of technical nature that was raised. The first question then was, of course, what a quantum of the claim entail, and whether that includes future losses. And if the members could look at page 2 of the poll, then at the bottom, from line 20, the proposed new section, capital 2A, sub 2, where the state is liable to pay for the cost of future care, future medical treatment, and future loss of earnings. So it includes or it addresses the question raised by the honourable member with regard to the quantum, what the quantum entails. The question related to that was for how long, and that is also on page 2 then at the bottom. Roman numeral 2, only during the lifetime of the injured party. So one of the concerns with regard to like some claimants, Mr. Chair, is that if you take, for example, the cerebral palsy case, the court is placed in a very difficult position to determine the potential lifespan of the injured part and then determine quantum according to that. Now, that can either work in favor of the injured party or possibly even against the injured party. Let's use the example and we say that the court determines that the injured party will live for 25 years. Then the quantum is then determined accordingly, and the amount is paid out in one lump sum immediately to the injured party. It may be that the injured party does not live that long, or to the detriment of the injured party, that the injured party may live longer than that. And that is one of the advantages that we have here, is that the bill will now make provision that if there is a substantial change in the circumstances of the injured party, then he or she is free to approach the court again to ask for the reassessment of the determination of the periodic payments insofar as the medical treatment, etc., of the new authority is concerned. The rationale behind the amendment, Mr. Chair, among others, I think I would like to maybe supplement that in the writing, but the rationale is that lump sum payments, coming back to the example of cerebral palsy taxes again, the majority of the quantum relates to future expenses. So let's say, for example, a claim of 50 million must be paid out. Now it is paid out in one lump sum, and it is deducted from the specific provincial hospital budget. So it's 50 million immediately not available to provide other services to other potential patients, which have a negative effect then on the ability of public health establishments to treat other patients. The advantage, if I may call it that, associated with periodic payments then is that in a case where 8% of the quantum relates to future expenses, you will place the public health establishment then in a position to pay less money over a specific period of time, which will also alleviate the concerns with regard to budgetary constraints.
Are you done?
Thank you, Jim. Sorry.
Yeah. You know, I just find it strange that anybody can say the Supreme Court of Appeals has a duty to develop customary law. Courts deal with matters that arise before them. They don't take the initiative. And the question of development of customary law is a constitutional imperative. It can be left to the courts. Are we saying that government is not going to act until the matter, a dispute arises? When a dispute arises, it means some people must pay. The majority of the people that are affected by injustice don't even have money to go to the courts. Maybe the time has come that in the same manner that we had a conference on the transformation of the judiciary, we must have a conference on the transformation of the legal system. You can see these matters are transversal. Health department is involved, social department is involved, law commission is involved. Right now, there is a customary initiation bill. A lay person even is able to explain the challenges, the defects in the law better than the lawyers and the lawmakers. I think that we will be failing in our duty as lawmakers not to deal with matters holistically and wait until there's a challenge and then we address the challenge. Committee Secretary, I think we need to look at our budget. We really need, the department must look at their budget. We need a conference on the transformation of the legal system because we can't be dealing with these things bits by bits. At the same time, the majority of the people don't have access to justice because all we sit here to do is to ensure that people can access justice. But the way we are going, about 10 years we have been sitting here calling ourselves a committee of justice.
I have a slight problem. Personally, I understand that you or the Department of Health wants to save money. As my colleague here said, you want us to endorse the negligence of practitioners at the expense of those people who are suffering. Let's suppose I'm injected with wrong injection, or and I'm paralyzed from the waist down. I was going to be a runner or whatever. I lose, I cannot take care of myself. Particularly in our communities where a person is not only responsible for himself, responsible for the upkeep of various members of the community, of the society, of the family. My mother depends on me, and so on. And I will have children as well. Now, if you say that you will only give me, it means you're going to ration me. And if you give me the lump sum, then I'm able to say, all right, I put so much in investments, and my future children or whatever, and the other people are also going to benefit. Now, from the point of view of government, it is losing money because of the negligence of its own employees. But from the point of view of the patient, he is actually being disadvantaged by this law. I'm not sure if you looked into that in that manner. How do you account for that? I mean, I thought that you were talking about medical expenses only. But if you're now talking about any other things, loss of income and so on, you are definitely putting the patient at a disadvantage. Is that correct?
You are right. And that even means that the word structured is not the correct terminology. It's staggered payment. And then when you stagger the payment, who is prejudiced? The prejudiced person is the person to whom the injustice has been done to protect the person who committed the negligence. Is that justice? Is how you should read justice to mean? Why should you stagger the payment at the expense of the victim? The victim must suffer twice. Can you answer that question? But before you come to that, Honorable Mlauzi.
Thanks, Chairperson. Again, I want to know, when you are talking about this structured or periodical payment, what are you saying about the inflation rate? Because the same amount of money you use this year, the value is not the same. What are you saying about the inflation rate in terms of this? Thank you.
Honorable, did you raise your hand?
No.
Can Honorable Tapo?
I hope, Chairperson, they are still yet to respond to some of the issues we raised.
Okay.
And again, I'm coming to the issue of staggered. Structured settlement. The structured settlement, when you look at the bill, it's not clearly defined. So maybe if we can have clarity on that. And again, Chairperson, the issue of the target is one target of amount is 1 million and above. So does it mean then if amount is less than that, let's say from 999 downwards, so the amount will then be paid in lump sum also. And also I request that you respond to those three issues which I have raised. Thank you.
Well, you are raising the question of legal certainty. A law must be certain. When people read the law, they must know what it means. It must not have 100 meanings. Now, the way it is worded, it means anyone can attach any interpretation, and that creates big business for lawyers who will go and argue for 6 months and make more money out of the misery of the poor. So can we have laws drafted in such a way that they are clear and they have one meaning. And you then
and again, the issue of there is in the document here is there is wrongful treatment. Are we not supposed to be talking about negligent treatment? Maybe if you could also clarify that. Wrongful. They are talking about wrongful treatment instead of negligent treatment. So I want to for them to clarify this too.
Lawyers must know that for a crime to have been committed, there must be a wrongful act and a negligent. There must be an intention. And then if you just say wrongful, it means the act does not disclose an offense. So can we please just, as lawyers, use the right language, which is the legal language? Otherwise, why should we call ourselves lawyers if we are not using the language that shows the differentiate us from the layperson?
Chairperson, thank you very much and greetings to my colleagues. I just have one question. On page 2, on page 7, where they say, excuse me, they propose new subsection 2, B and C makes provision for the instances where the state can be ordered to provide treatment to the injured parties. I just want to find out.
I was just attending to another
review and I'm asking a question where the new proposed subsection 2, B and C makes provision for instances where the state can be ordered to provide treatment for injured parties. As to where will this treatment be done in government hospitals? What if the patient himself does not or no longer believe in the same institution which has caused such damage to himself, and will the state be able to pay if I want to go to a private hospital for the matter?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'm in a specific order. I'm just going to run through all the questions as I see them on the page. Maybe to answer the last question first, where will the treatment be done with regard to the proposed new paragraphs 2, B and C? It is indeed so, Mr. Chair, that even the courts are very reluctant to order that public health establishments where the individuals who are injured be treated there again. However, there are instances where many public health establishments, which are some of the leading health establishments in the country, do provide treatment to injured parties that were injured in public health establishments. If you look at the proposed new 2B then on page 3 of the bill itself, it is to provide first of all that the court may order in place of the amount, now we're talking about the amount of the future expenses, or then at a reduced amount that the medical treatment then takes place by the state itself. However, section C, subparagraph C is very important, and that is to indicate or require that where the state is ordered to provide for future medical treatment at a public health establishment, the public health establishment concerned must be compliant with the norms and standards as determined by the Office of Health Standards Compliance. There is one example that I may use that I noted during discussions on that part, that there are problems, for example, of kindergarten, where the only health establishment that is available to provide services to either party is a public health establishment, and it's a very good public health establishment. Hopefully I've answered that question. With regard to the use of the term wrongful treatment, initially we did use the term negligent medical treatment because that is generally what it is referred to. However, we realized that we might inadvertently create a gap in the amendment if we only refer to negligent medical treatment, because then it cases of complaint where the doctor complaintioner, the person, will be excluded.
Why is it not
wrongful and negligent?
If you want to cover both,
we can look at that. With regard to 1 million rand claim, the total of the claim is then for a couple 1 rand less than 1 million rand, then it will be paid out in a lump sum. Structured settlement is once again a term that we use to refer to two different components of the claim, and that is the component dealing with the past and present expenses, immediate expenses, which will then be paid out in the lump sum, and then the second component of that claim, or the settlement of the claim, will then relate to the future periodic payments that must be made to the injured party. With regard to the question relating to the inflation rate, on paragraph on page 3 of the bill, from line 15 onwards, subsection 3, we use the CPIX as the guide to ensure that periodic payments do not decrease over time but keep up then with inflation. So in other words, that will be every 12 months there will be an automatic increase in the periodic funding to be paid to the injured party. The question with regard to whether this bill aims to endorse the negligence of practitioners, that is not the case. Medical practitioner or health practitioner who acts negligently and causes potential loss for the state can always be held liable to repay the state for its losses, but it's a question of the public health establishment that are the claims are instituted against. With regard to the questions of earlier raised with what the status is at the moment and how important the amendment is, I would like to possibly receive the chairperson's consent to maybe submit a letter explanation to that regard. But this proposed amendment is important to the extent that it will bring about an alleviation of the financial burden which public health establishments suffer at the moment as a result of those claims. Mr. Chair, I think I've covered all the questions. Thank you.
When are we having a conference on the transformation of the legal system? Because we called for such a conference 10 years ago, and it still has not happened. Minister Jeff Hadebe called a conference for transformation of judiciary. Judiciary is just one aspect. When are we dealing with the transformation of the entire legal system? Because there are lots of inconsistencies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Minister is here. I said that Minister Jeff Hadebe had a conference on the transformation of the judiciary, and that conference brought together academics, practitioners, and it was helpful in helping to come with a holistic plan to transform the judiciary, and that's why that has been done well. But now the legal system, we call for the transformation of the legal system, and there has never been such a conference. and this forces us to deal with matters piecemeal. And the law is transversal. We need to deal with different aspects. Why are we not having such a conference so that we involve civil society, law students, paralegals, academics, everybody? Now we also talk about transformation of the curriculum. We have to be harassed by students calling for transformation of the judiciary. We said we need to introduce the indigenous African law, indigenous languages. These things are not happening. What are we waiting for? Are we waiting for a crisis, or what are we waiting for? Why can't we have a conference to holistically deal with these matters and find solution? Because the ultimate goal is to make sure that we deliver justice to all of the people of this country. Why are we waiting?
Chair, we will look at the issue.
Can you look at it and come back to us?
Yes, we can come back to you.
Honorable members, you all have been covered. Can you move on to the honorable
Can they respond in writing within, let's say we set a time frame, let's say 4 to 7 days? Yes. Because if you just leave it open-ended, Chairperson will may lose it.
Yeah. Can we have the written
responses? And also at the next meeting, we also need the Department of Health to be here. And we're saying we don't want to be thrown with statistics. We want a situation analysis. And we don't think that it's not only the health department that has a problem. There's a problem in the state attorney's office, and black lawyers are saying they don't get briefings, and now it is clear that they don't get briefs because there is corruption. And we said that the state attorney's office must be transformed. We need a report on the transformation of the office of the state attorney. Who is in the office of the state attorney? And then we have spoken about the law land claims court. There are no permanent judges. Now we are running through the whole country saying we'll expropriate land without compensation. We're going to be taken to court. And then one problem after another. And the things that we raised in this committee are never followed up. So why should we even come to this committee? Why should the committee exist if what we say is not taken seriously? Would some of us sit in the Judicial Services Commission? When we interview judges, there are no judges that are being interviewed for positions in the Land Claims Court. And we don't get an explanation. Deputy Minister, can we understand why these things are not happening?
Yes, Chair. I mean, I would also suggest, though, that you raise that issue in the Judicial Services Commission when
no,
you
no,
sit.
No, we are Parliament. We raise it with the Minister. The Judicial Services Commission doesn't have contract. You have to answer us here. Why are you not appointing judges to the...
Chair, as you know, the Judicial Service Commission recommends the judges to the President for appointment, not the Department. So I would suggest you raise that issue in the Judicial Services Commission with the Chief Justice.
The committee, I think, want to recommend that you advise the President, because the President advises you to be ministers of the Deputy Ministers of Justice. You have the responsibility to advise the President on what to do, because we cannot run government. We don't want to run government. We don't want to co-govern.
So can you maybe come back with the answers to us?
Chair, can we please deal with, I have to leave at 12:30 latest to catch a flight back to Pretoria. Can we deal with the Legal Practice Act regulations, please, next?
Okay. Yes, can we
leave that? Look. basically, what this is about is, in terms of the Legal Practice Act, there were issues that were not resolved between the attorneys and the advocates, in particular relating to the manner of election of the Legal Practice Council and the powers of the provincial councils. And in terms of the Act, the National Forum has to come up with regulations. If they don't, there's provision for the minister to make the regulations. What you have then before you is two sets of regulations, one which is quite urgently required so that the elections for the new Legal Practice Council can proceed. In terms of the Legal Practice Act, the minister tables them after they've come from the National Forum, and they have to be approved by Parliament, by both houses. But if I can then request Charity, works for the National Forum, to take the committee through those regulations, the two sets.
Charity, who?
Charity Nzoza. Good morning, Chairperson.
What is your position? You work for your PA there, or what is your position?
I'm Charity Nzoza. I'm the executive officer of the National Forum. Good morning, Chairperson, and the honorable members. Just to go through the first set of regulations, which is as per Section 109 of the Legal Practice Act, it provides that the National Forum must make recommendations to the minister, where then the minister must make them regulations. Regulations 1 and 2, Regulation 1 just deals with the definition of the Act, and Section 94.1d empowers the minister to make regulations relating to the manner in which teachers of... No, I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong set. My apologies. Let's just look at the set which says regulations in terms of Section 109.1a of the Legal Practice Act. My apologies. Okay, and the enabling provisions, Section 97.1 as amended, requires the National Forum, which is the organization that I work for, to make recommendations to the minister on several matters, which recommendations must be converted into regulations. The National Forum submitted those recommendations to the minister in 2017, and it says that within 6 months, the minister must make regulations out of the recommendations from the National Forum. The regulations must, before publication in the Gazette, be approved by Parliament, and that is the reason that we are here today. Now, if we go through the regulations themselves, the first regulation is the election procedure of the Legal Practice Council. This regulation prescribes the election procedure of the council, and it provides that there will be separate voters' rolls, one for the advocates and another one for the attorneys. Each candidate must be nominated by two practicing attorneys or advocates, as the case may be. So each nomination for an attorney must be done by an attorney, two attorneys, and the advocates alike. The council then will send voting papers. That includes a ballot paper to all practicing attorneys, practitioners. The council is also required to appoint between 2 and 10 legal practitioners who will act as scrutineers during the election process, and these people will simply examine the ballot papers placed in the ballot box and to count the votes received. The scrutineers are also required to report on the results of the election to the chairperson and the referee, whereafter the referee must determine whether the election was conducted freely and fairly or not, and if not, fresh elections must be held. Also, on the election procedures, the ballot paper for attorneys is attached as Annex A on your regulations. And it is specifically saying that the composition of the LPC will be made up of 10 attorneys and 6 advocates. Now, out of the 10 attorneys, it is specific and says that 4 must be black women, 3 must be black men, 1 will be a white woman, and 2 will be white men. This converts into a 70-30 ratio in respect of racial representation between black and white, and it also converts to a 50-50 ratio in respect of gender representation. When it comes to the ballot paper for advocates, which the number of advocates on the council will be 6, the ballot paper is as per Annex B of the regulations, and it requires that the members of the advocate members who are chosen to be council members must be made up as follows. They must be 2 black women, 2 black men, 1 white woman, and 1 white man. So which totals up to 6. This converts to a 66-33 ratio in respect of racial representation between black and white, and a 50-50 ratio in respect of gender representation. It is also proposed that the following be inserted in each of the ballot papers where there is a clear definition of the term black. It says that it must have the same meaning as the term in Section 1 of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act, and which reads, read with the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act of 2013, it's a generic term which means black includes Africans, colors, and Indians who are citizens of the Republic of South Africa by birth or descent, or who became citizens in the Republic of South Africa by naturalization before 27 April 1994 or on or after 27 April 1994, and who will have been entitled to acquire citizenship by naturalization prior to the date, and such that persons as may be categorized as black persons for purposes of that legislation. Huh? And that completes the second regulation to which speaks about the elections of the LPC. Regulation 3 deals with the establishment of the provincial councils. Here we recommended that Regulation 3 lists the seats of the 9 provincial councils, which translates to 1 provincial council on every province, and the provincial council must also establish at least 1 committee of the provincial council at every centre within that province at which there is a seat of a division of the High Court, but no office of the provincial council. The committee in that instance must consist of at least 2 attorneys and 2 advocates and will assist the provincial council. And the seats of the provincial councils are listed on the regulations. Regulation 4 deals with the composition of the provincial council. It basically says that each provincial council will have 10 practicing legal practitioners, except for Gauteng, which will have 12. And this is mainly because half of the legal practitioners are based in Gauteng. It also further says that out of the 10 members who are members of the provincial council, 50% must be female and 50% must be male. In the case of Gauteng, it was proposed that there are four black attorneys, 4 white attorneys, with a 50-50 racial, which is a 50% racial ratio, and the same ratio applies in respect of advocates in terms where it is 2 black advocates and 2 white advocates. But in all other provinces, the split of the provincial council, which will be 10 members, will be 4 black attorneys, 2 white attorneys, and 2 black advocates and 2 white advocates. Okay, then we get to Regulation 5, and that regulation talks about the powers and functions of provincial council. So the main LPC will delegate a lot of functions to the provincial councils for easy access to justice. And it says that a legal practitioner who has registered a physical address within the area of jurisdiction of a provincial council will fall within the jurisdiction of the PC. And the functions which have been delegated to the provincial council are listed on the regulations, but these are mainly administrative matters such as admission and enrollment of attorneys and advocates that can best be done at a localized level. Then we get to Regulation 6, which talks about the practical vocational training of candidate attorneys. Now, this regulation provides for two options for candidate attorneys to be admitted and enrolled as attorneys. The first option is that the individual must have a degree in terms of Section 26(1)(a) or B of the LPA, and then they must enter into a PVC contract for a continuous period of 24 months. And during that service of the contract, or within a period of no longer than 12 months after termination of the PVC contract, they must do a training course of 150 notional hours. Option two, which is available to candidate attorneys, is that they must still also have a degree in terms of Section 26(1)(a) or B, but they can then just directly do a training course of not less than 400 notional hours just after completing that degree. After that, they can then enter into a PVT contract of a continuous period of 12 months. And the course modules for candidate attorneys are also listed in the regulations. Then further features of this PVT are that a PVT contract must be under a practicing attorney. And also to broaden the base for access to the profession, there is provision made that they can be engaged by attorneys employed by Legal Aid South Africa, Legal Aid Institution, and any other institution that employ legal practitioners that and have been approved by the council. An attorney may have a maximum of 3 candidate attorneys, and an attorney at an institution a maximum of 6. The reason for the difference, of course, is that the numbers in organizations have much larger administrative support structures available, so they can handle more than 3 candidates at a time. Regulation 7 deals with training for pupils, and it provides for a PVT contract of a continuous period of 12 months after a pupil has obtained an LLB degree. The pupil, in addition, prior or during the service under the contract, must complete a program of structured coursework which is not less than 400 notional hours, and the compulsory modules are listed on the regulations. Similar to the current position in terms of pupils, pupils must be engaged by an advocate who is enrolled and practices as such. And in order to broaden the access base, again, the advocates who are in full-time employment of Legal Aid South Africa and Legal Aid or any Legal Aid institution or any other institution which has been approved by the council can also train pupils as per the draft regulations. The number of pupils that may be engaged by an advocate is limited to 1. And in the case of legal aid organization or other institution, it is limited to 6 pupils. Then we go to Regulation 8, right of appearance of pupils. This regulation gives right of appearance to pupils in the same manner as candidate attorneys, namely that they can appear in the lower courts and before board tribunals or similar institutions. It also states that pupils can appear in the regional divisions of the magistrate court after pupillage of 6 months only. Regulation 9 just provides that every matter must be settled before dissolution of the national forum, so every liability or anything that is owing must be settled before the national forum, which is planned to dissolve on the 31st of October. the annexures attached at annexures A and B contain the ballot papers, which is one is for attorneys and other one is for advocates respectively. And that is the end of the first set of regulations.
I'm not a communist. The communists would not allow you to be in government unless you have read the Das Kapital by Karl Marx. You know, the democracy that we're enjoying did not fall from heaven. It has architects like O.R. Tambo, Sobukwe, Steve Biko, and others. They said that they want to create a non-racial South Africa, not a multiracial South Africa. Your regulation shows that we are nowhere going near the creation of a non-racial South Africa. Maybe the writings of O.R. Tambo, Steve Biko, Sobukwe, and all these people must be made compulsory for lawyers, because we rely on you to transform South Africa into a non-racial democracy. But these regulations show that you cannot come to grips with what a non-racial South Africa must be. We talk about black and white, but the Constitutional Court has said the Chinese say they are also black. If the Chinese go to court and say they've been excluded because your regulations exclude them, what are you going to say? And if you say black are not homogeneous. If someone comes and say the person that you have put there is Pedi, I'm Venda, or I'm Pondo, what are you going to say? And if you say white, if someone says I'm white of German extraction, you see we're deepening the racial divide and the racial problems. And the question which I want to raise is, we have said that we want the fusion of the bar and sidebar. How far have we gone in dealing with the question of the fusion of the bar and sidebar? Because all these percentages, they show that we have not done any work to fuse the bar and white bar. And then that's why we have quotas. And say you say women, and then the Chinese women or the Afrikaner women can come and say we are underrepresented. Then we have another problem. Training. Why, if we want to fuse the bar and side bar, why is there still different training for attorneys and advocates? It means we're not going anywhere. And the youth are the future of this country. To which extent have the law students who have the formations, they participate in the councils of universities? To what extent have they participated in all these things? Because the students, law students, must have a say in the transformation of the legal system. They are the people who are going to run this legal system. The paralegal movement is very organized. They are represented on the continental level, in the international forums. Have they been part of this? And also, some lawyers are so poorly trained that they get expelled by their clients. People say, I don't want this lawyer, I want to represent myself. So if you are even going to say for people to represent, they must have these qualifications. What if in the middle of the trial, I think I better be represented by my grandfather, because this lawyer is poorly trained. He doesn't even understand my language. So I'm just saying that this regulation also show that we are not taking the transformation agenda seriously, and we are doing it at our own pace, and we are not bearing in mind that the object of all these exercises is about making justice to the people, and people, I really mean the majority of the people, are the ordinary people. Who is going to oversee all these percentages and all these things? And lastly, it would seem that you have deprived the Minister of Justice of his power, because the legal forum must go and agree, and then the minister must just rubber stamp, and then Parliament must come and rubber stamp. Now, where does power reside? Does it reside in the legal forum, which cannot get its act together? Does it reside in the minister, who is turned into a rubber stamp? Does it reside in Parliament, which must be rubber stamped? I am saying that this thing, with due respect, I'm not standing in the way of anything, but I just think that we are losing focus on the main thing. The main thing is to create a non-racial democracy. This is not a non-racial democracy. It's a tribal, ethnic, and racial confederation of states. Honorable Deputy.
Thanks, Chair. Just these regulations are made in terms of the Legal Practice Act. The Legal Practice Act does not provide for fusion. It provides for a single regulatory body for attorneys and for advocates. And the numbers of attorneys and the numbers of advocates for the Legal Practice Council are set out in that act. So unfortunate, I mean, the issue of fusion is something that was debated when the Legal Practice Act was considered, or Legal Practice Bill was considered, but the view was at least to move towards a single regulatory framework. So the Act, the regulations are in terms of the Act. As far as the racial and gender breakdown, I think Ms. Nzuza can explain, but I think the difficulty that the forum had was that the majority of attorneys and advocates are white male. If you had an election, you would have a legal practice council, or at least the attorneys and the advocates' representatives being predominantly white male. So I think that is why, I mean, she can give more detail, that came from the forum. But I think, with due respect, Chair, the rest is what is in the Act. The procedure in the Act is the forum produces the recommendations, or whatever they call it, but the minister must gazette them. The minister only has power if there's a dispute. There were two issues, and although she says that the regulations were submitted in last year, there were two areas where they were not resolved. The first was around the placing of the provincial offices, where the National Forum wanted the head of the KZN provincial office to be in Durban, and the KZN Law Society complained to the ministry that they had building that they owned in Pietermaritzburg. So we went back to the forum to ask them to relook at the issue. Can this not, because on the 1st of November you have a building, you have an office, you have staff in Pietermaritzburg, whereas if you move it to Durban, you've got to set that up afresh. So it was agreed that it would stay as Pietermaritzburg for now, and the new Legal Practice Council, or the Provincial Council, KZN Council, could look at where to move it. The other issue was on the question of training. And they couldn't reach agreement on that, on the basis that some people were arguing for sort of one kind of training. The problem that we raised with them is that this training starts next year.
Currently, attorneys, candidate attorneys, go to the legal practice school lead, and then advocates that are members of a bar are trained by that bar. Advocates who are not members of the bar actually don't get any training at all. So there will have to be new provision made for those people. And the appeal was, for the moment, because this starts next year and the practical problems of ensuring that next year's cohort of candidate attorneys and advocates are trained properly, that they continue with status quo, and the Legal Practice Council can again also relook at that issue in the medium term. So that's basically that.
Deputy Minister, you are right in everything that you are saying. But you see, the bottom line is that we cannot be bound by things that are blatantly wrong. Because the bar and sidebar must be fused, not by heaven, by us. And the time has really come that the bar and sidebar must be fused. And if there's going to be a problem that the whites are a majority, it's a historical fact. We can make the law which says the minister appoint the legal counsel to make sure that there is fair representation. Because we can't wait until there are more black lawyers. After all, even these whites are also South Africans. But we can't be held back by that. We need to choose the bar and sidebar. And if there's a question of race, we can address it by law. And that's why we have a constitutional review committee. And unless the ministers, the members feel otherwise, I think that before October, we need a conference on the transformation of the judiciary. Otherwise, we are wasting taxpayers' money here because we are doing piecemeal things and we're at great cost. Honorable Mutapo, Honorable Kumulwane, Honorable, I don't see the other Honorable, Honorable Hon.
Chairperson, may I follow up of the response by the Deputy Minister? The Legal Practice Act is to provide for, maybe listen to this, a legislative framework for the transformation and restructuring of the legal profession in line with constitutional imperatives so as to facilitate and enhance an independent legal profession that broadly reflects the diversity and demographics of the Republic. I'm coming to the issue of, it's a long paragraph, to the issue raised by the chairperson in terms of the transformation of the legal profession, whereby the response of the Honorable Deputy Minister is that the purpose was to have a single regulatory board. But when you look at this preamble in terms of Section 22 of the Constitution, the main intention was for the transformation of the legal profession. That's the first issue and the main issue, Chairperson. The second one is the issue of housing as yes, has responded to. Of Gauteng, have all provincial councils will be having 10, Gauteng 12. And then you advance reasons that because half of the legal practitioners are based in Gauteng. Okay? And then another thing is the outstanding issues. Last time when the National Forum appeared before this committee, there were issues of which the attorneys profession and the advocates were not agreeing to, like issue of assets and other related issues. How far with those? is. And then the issue also of paralegal is of concern to us as a committee, Deputy Minister. May you also share light on that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm happy you read that paragraph. That paragraph goes to the core of the Constitution, which means that when we interpret it properly, it does not exclude fusion of the bar inside bar. And the question
still remains, why are we not moving towards fusion of the bar and sidebar? And if the legal practice bill is wrong, it was made by us, we have a responsibility to review it, and we don't want to usurp the power of the of the executive. Why is the legislative not review this thing and make sure that it is a law that take a transformation forward? Honorable Pumulon?
No, I'm sorry,
In a way, maybe this question was answered. I would apologize, ma'am. I just wanted to find out on the question of Regulation 4. Of Regulation 4, when you talked about in Gauteng that there should be 50-50, on what basis, and when the others is not, on what basis are you coming on time? Are you saying that there are less Africans, there are more whites in Gauteng than other provinces? Is that your basis? How do you say that? No, I'm just saying when you're looking at it, you say 66% and 33% ratio, and but in Gauteng there's to be 50-50. What is the basis? Oh, you just decided to use that. And the second thing was also based on this question of, I think, I understand that the regulations are really based on the, mainly on the act that is there. But I still feel strongly that I thought the Canadian system, where it's just becoming a legal practitioner, is better than this use the same system to continue. I don't know if what must we do, because now we are the time frames on this particular thing, and we've got some problems with it. If you have to alter somehow the act to toe a particular line, because we don't know what is going to happen on the sixth parliament, when the parliament to come, whether we won't get resistance to this change. I'm not sure, but I am just saying that we need to reconsider straightening up where there are problems. Dundras, I don't know. I don't know what
I have the mic
to
for the
crime. Oh, I see. Sorry. I say that I first of all, I think they have captured what I said as far as this is concerned. But the other one is a question of agreeing with Mutap on what he was raising. So I think she raised it quite well. And I agree with you that we need to fuse the legal profession as is done in Canada, for example. Just making an example about Canada, where there's only one legal practitioner rather than you have these two different ones. But however, I say if there is a need, we need to alter. I agree with you, Chairman, on where if we need to alter the act to toe that particular line. I thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me firstly add my voice to yours and say that the way that there's a reservation on these councils based on race, in all probability cannot meet constitutional requirements. If there is a fear that the practice itself will not embrace transformation to the fullest, then we should find other ways to address that, as you have already alluded to. But for now, I think we can quite clearly say that we will not go back to race-based reservation support, going back to race-based reservations. You said that this is a tribal federalism. To my mind, this, if allowed, will take us full circle back to pre-1994, because this is like a tricameral parliament. The only thing that's really lacking here is that the department must come and say that the black practitioners will elect the black representatives on this council, and the whites will elect the whites, and then we full scale back to apartheid. While we're talking about the sensitivities around this issue, for example, another issue is that there's now a reservation in terms of gender, but it seems to be tone deaf to the developments around the fact that sometimes people do not want to identify as a gender. So what will be done if that is to be the case, in respect of somebody who wants to be a candidate for one of these positions? And then lastly, I must say that just from a legal point of view, the regulations in terms of the establishment of these councils, the so-called election, you don't need a special insight to already foresee that this, if it's left in the manner it's set up now, will lead to continuous challenges, legal challenges. There's just simply no way one can have a postal vote system in this day and age and not already foresee that there will be huge scale challenges as to the credibility of these elections. I think it really begs for an explanation. At this moment, it would seem that all of these bodies who's coming together hold annual general meetings, where those who are interested in helping to self-regulate pitch up and take part. I, for one, really cannot see why we should go back to a postal system vote, given the fact that we all know how that can be, at best, if we must put it mildly, be manipulated. Thank you, Jim.
Honorable Deputy Minister, I don't want to spoil what the honorable members are saying. This Parliament is not precluded from amending the Legal Practice Bill and bring it in line with the Constitution. Secondly, that we mustn't be passing laws which must suggest that we're going back to tricameralism and Bantustan philosophies. And secondly, that these regulations may not even pass the constitutional muster. What are you saying? Are you saying we must take a chance, go ahead, and wait for someone to take us to the constitutional court and say, I'm neither male or female, I'm excluded, and therefore I'm discriminated against? Is that what we should be saying as this Parliament? Honorable Mbula?
I want to come to, I think what the, as far as that is concerned, I had Honorable Horn about this. I think what they want to do is to promote affirmative action. I don't think that it is a question of bringing apartheid. I think that is a reality where we come from. I think when they say that they need, I mean, these are the two things that there's a race, there's gender, and there's that, the things that considered. I think what they want to do is to say, make sure that what people are calling black are well represented. And it's a reality of the fact that over the years, the white community has been promoted by a government officially. So what they want to, I think what they want to do...
But he said, are there no other ways? I think he's just suggesting that maybe they, we should look at other ways. But another point that he's raising is about people who will say a male or female.
No. I think with due respect, that is saying too much. Basically, everywhere you go to almost all, even the ANC constitution clearly says that, the 50-50 on that, and there should be affirmative action on the disabled people and that type of thing. It's trying to affirm a particular group because of our historical background. That part of it.
That we agree.
I think that we shouldn't really clobber them on that.
Affirmative action is part of the constitution. Nobody can debate that. That we accept. Then we deal with the other matters.
Can I just start and then Ms. Nzuza can come in with more of the detail? Look, just to say that from the ministry's side, the issue of the allocation of seats on the National Legal Practice Council and the provincial councils is not something that we were involved in at all. It's something that the National Forum came up and reached agreement on. It was not one of the issues. That agreement was, and if you will remember the composition of the National Forum, it's representatives of the Bar Council, the Independent Bar, the Law Societies, BLA, NADEL, and Advocates for Transformation, amongst others. So it's learned lawyers. I presume they would have looked at the issue of constitutionality. But also just to take issue with two things. I mean, I agree with Honorable Mpumlwana. I mean, with respect... saying that the gender issue, the 50-50, is wrong because of people who are gender neutral. We follow 50-50 in a number of other fora, including in the African National Congress, in terms of representation in both public and organizational office. Nobody's raised that issue before. To Mr. Horn, with respect on saying this is taking us back to the pre-1994 apartheid, Mr. Horn, with respect, pre-1994 there was no democracy. The majority of people in South Africa are African, 80% of the population. They were not represented at all in the tricameral parliament. Can I be protected, please? I think the difficulty, and Ms. Mzuza can explain more detail, this is what the forum came up with. Okay? The other aspect, just to responding on Honorable Motapo, there's two issues, this transformation and this fusion. The Legal Practice Act is meant to be a transformatory act and to bring transformation to the legal profession, but it does not go for fusion. Now, the reason for that is, and why it took such a long time for that act to be passed, was that the attorneys and the advocates were expected to try and reach agreement, and they couldn't. But the issue of fusion is something very serious in the legal profession, very seriously debated, particularly by the advocates. So I would really urge, and Chair, you were, I admittedly it was towards the end of the last few months before it passed the bill, the last parliament passed the Legal Practice Act. They didn't go for fusion. To take a decision about whether to now have fusion is going to take a lot of time and a lot of engagement with the different stakeholders. I think the last point, Chair, you mentioned that why can't the Minister just appoint members of the Legal Practice Council? The legal profession is meant to be independent. The Minister's powers in terms of that, and if you start saying the Council is appointed by the Minister, there's going to be a huge outcry from many sectors of society, including, I'm sure, the judiciary. The difficulty we face is that, look, there's a lot of people who are not in favor of there's a lot of people who would like, particularly attorneys, who would like fusion. There's a lot of people who don't want to see the Legal Practice Council work. What is in the Act is this process that I've outlined, and the expectation is for the new Legal Practice Council to take over on the 1st of November. And what Parliament does with these regulations is simply accept or reject. If it's rejected, it would have to go back to the National Forum for rediscussion, and I don't know how long that would take. So that is my concern. It's regulations they have come up with themselves. Yes, there is a provision in the Act for parliamentary approval, both houses, but Parliament doesn't have to approve, it's got the option to reject, it can't amend, but then that would delay the establishment of the Legal Practice Council.
Let me not talk too much.
From what we are saying, it means that we must accept or reject what the legal forum. We must reject or accept what the legal forum wants. And we represent not the legal forum, we represent the people of South Africa who want access to justice. So in other words, we must rubber stamp on behalf of the people of South Africa. And the question is, will we be carrying out our mandate? Because legal practitioners are business people and who are defending their business interests. The ordinary people just want to access justice under the Constitution and the law. Now, are we representing business interests, or are we representing the majority of the people, the poorest of the poor, who elected us? But I'm not the committee. I think we have reached a stage where the committee must take a decision whether we're representing business interests or we're representing the poorest of the poor who want to access justice. Honorable members, I think you have heard for yourself what is the way forward.
Yeah, maybe just in response to that, in terms of the Legal Practice Amendment Act, which was passed by this Parliament, the life of the National Forum was extended to the end of October. If these regulations are not approved by Parliament, these regulations that have come from the statutory body provided for in terms of the Legal Practice Act, then number one, well, the Act has to come into effect. There will be no law societies. The bar councils stay because they're not statutory. There will be no law societies on the 1st of November. So I just want to raise whatever choice you make, that is something you've got to make. But I think that the problems of then having a lack of a regulatory body for attorneys and advocates from the 1st of November would be problematic.
Deputy Minister, you in your response you said attorneys and advocates did not agree on certain issues. So if the intention of the Legal Practice Act was to transform the legal profession, and the two bodies, advocates and attorneys, decide don't agree, then Rena as the people's friend, carrying the mandate of our people to say no, there should be transformation of this. And these people who are directly affected are saying no, so how do you think we must go about it?
Because he's also saying lots of people do not want the legal counsel to work. Now we are approving
and the last part of if the this committee, because we still need to apply our mind. I don't think now we'll be able to take a decision. If this committee is not agreeing to this regulation due to issues raised, so there is this issue of saying that then the attorneys will be negatively affected, because the law societies come the 1st of November, they will be dysfunctional. So,
I'm not sort of sure. The history of the Legal Practice Act, the Legal Practice Act was passed with inputs from the profession, from the attorneys, from the advocates. There were a number of different views. So the views of a BLA would be different to the views of many white practitioners, for example. The views of advocates for transformation may be different to the views of people at the bar. So you had a number of different views. The Act was passed with their input. I would not say that everybody was in agreement from the profession was in agreement with the Act, but it was passed, and I think it was passed unanimously by Parliament, as far as I recall. So it's transformation is an ongoing thing, and I would argue that the Act is transformatory. As far as the second part of the question, sorry if I've missed it. Currently, the national forum it can only be it lives until the end of October. Then it won't exist anymore. Parliament would probably have to amend the Act again to delay the coming into effect of the Legal Practice Act. If Parliament rejects this, it would then have to probably go back to the National Forum to reconsider. But I think Ms. Nzuza can talk. I'd understood that they'd had a number of meetings with lots of arguments between attorneys and advocates and the different bodies. Not so much between attorneys and advocates, because, I mean, the allocation for attorneys, the allocation for advocates is in the Act. But they had a lot of debate, and she can maybe talk about how many meetings there were to come up with what you've got here.
Deputy Minister, is it not true that the Bar Council are predominantly white?
Yes.
And that's why they are independent bars of dissatisfied black people who feel they are not accommodated there. So these Bar Councils are not one themselves, and then you go to BLA is predominantly black, actually predominantly African, and is a number of white Indians there, Nadel is predominantly African, and a sprinkling of Indians there, maybe one or two whites. So it means the legal profession that we want to rely on for transformation cannot transform itself. And then we must be held hostage by the legal forum comprising people who cannot get their act together. But we are not elected by the legal forum. We are elected by the people of South Africa as a whole, and who just want nothing else but access to justice. But we cannot give them access to justice because of business and racial interests. What do we do?
The powers given to the National Forum on the Legal Practice Act were given in terms of the Legal Practice Act.
Yes, sir.
So, yes. Well, the problem is, Chair, that act is what is the law. Okay, but as you know, changing laws requires quite a lot of processes, including political decisions taken by the parties that sent us here. So I just want to stress that. So these regulations are in terms of that act.
Honourable members, I think the Deputy Minister has given us all the Mrs. You said you are Mrs.? Nzuza, I think Mrs. Nzuza and the Deputy Minister have done the best they can to enlighten us, so the matter is in our hands to take a decision. What do we do? Pardon?
Can I just say one more word?
No, you are most welcome.
Thank you. I'll just deal with the many issues raised by the members here, and the first one being the racial quotas that are included in the regulations.
I'm not sure that this debate in the quotas is going to take it, because see there are deep political issues and constitutional issues that are arising from this whole thing. Maybe we need to go to our political principles and to deal with this thing. Because quotas just make some of us who are victims of apartheid sick. We think of the past. Although we accept that there must be affirmative action. The question is now, we are faced with a deadline of October. If we don't adopt these regulations wrong as they are, then there will be no law cancel. So I think the politicians must decide, what do we do now?
Can I say something maybe for the politicians to decide? If these regulations are approved by this committee, these regulations will give effect to the election of the first legal practice council, which will only have an office of 3 years. So my thinking is that as much as members will be dissatisfied with these regulations, but it gives the first legal practice council, which is elected, to make changes and come back to this parliament and effect the necessary changes, and even request amendments to the act. But I think we need to start somewhere. Otherwise, we will still have the bar and the sidebars separate come the 1st of November, and the law societies running their own.
You have made your case. I think the politicians must take responsibility now. Honorable members, Honorable Mpumla, let's decide.
Can we sleep over it? Can we sleep over it? Because I think they are raising very, very important issues here. And I personally did not put my mind before I came here. I think that it's important that we sleep over it. And then we probably come back next week and decide with a particular answer of the line of action.
Honorable Ron, did you raise your hand? No. Just Honorable Tapu, what do you say? Chairperson, taking into consideration very critical issues which were raised here and the implications. Maybe it's because I'm a bit conflicted. My apologies. And take into consideration the negative implications it will have on attorneys, on law societies. I really don't know if the Manzunza and the Deputy Minister will agree with me if we don't. Let's say approve or recommend this week, will it be late if we say applying our minds, then next week we give them a go ahead? But yes,
can I give you my view? I'm persuaded by Manzi that we let this regulation go on condition that we start a process of reviewing the legal practice bill. and holding a conference on the transformation of the judiciary, because a country that doesn't have a transformation of the legal system, because unless the legal system is in order, then our constitutional democracy doesn't mean anything. So my recommendation would be that because we let the regulations go, and then so that we don't create a confusion in the country, but we need a comprehensive solution. We really, before October, we need a constitutional conference to look at the entire legal system. Can Honorable Blausi?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I am partly supporting your view, but I was saying that why don't we say as this thing came to us unexpected, that we say that decision, we can endorse it next week on the next week meeting, after we consult and we check around ourselves, so that we took a conscious decision. But in principle, that's the point, we can't put the country at halt, because the 31st of October is coming, it's around the corner. So if by next week we can cement.
So you agree with the Honorable Chapter that we sleep over this thing, that we don't sleep forever. Let's have to wake up and deal with it.
Honorable
Chapter,
I was asking GM and Mandusa to say, will if we postpone a decision, although agreed in principle, up to next week, will we then? Will that have a negative impact come the 1st of November? Maybe he can just nod by the head. But if it will have that negative impact for the other legal practitioners, then I'll agree with you that we approve, then we sit on other issues.
Chair, I'm informed, and Ms. Mzuza can confirm it, that the requirement is that the regulations need to be approved by Parliament by the 1st of September, because it would have to go to the House. So it would seem then, well, I imagine, although I've been told, I think they want them in effect by 1st of September, so it would need to be a little before then, because they take effect when they're published, but that a postponement to next week, preferably on Tuesday, would be fine.
Yeah, I think let's accommodate one another. The parties have a responsibility to go to their principal. We will flip over this thing, but we must play it on record that we are tired of working under duress, because you should have known last year that you needed regulations. You should have brought these regulations, and the people affected by the regulations should have gotten their act together. We are made to do things last minute, and the day we leave this parliament, we're going to have a pile of wrong laws and regulations that we have passed, and then we go down in history as having been the most hopeless committee, and I don't think we are the most hopeless people. I think we are competent people, but we are made to fail by some people who fail to do their work elsewhere. So we agree unanimously that we will sleep over this, and next week we will come. And but if there are some little changes that you are still able to do, please make those changes. The bottom line is that we are here to serve the majority of the people, to have access to justice, and not to serve interest groups. We are not elected by interest groups, but by the people of South Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Deputy Minister.
Chair, no, may I be excused. There's another set of regulations, but it's less urgent. But while Ms. Mzuza is here, if she can go through them. But may I be excused?
No, you are well excused. I think our heads are hot now. If there are other regulations, we'll get mad again.
The magistrate.
Yeah, don't forget your jacket.
And please, if you can also have the magistrates, the two members have come down to brief you. I don't set the agenda for the committee, it's the
other regulations are not on our. When you are a lawyer, you brief people. The brief must be clear. If there are two intertwined things, you must make it clear that you are presenting two things that are intertwined. Otherwise, we'll overrule you wrongly because the mandate is wrong.
My apologies, Chairperson. The second regulations, I think, because they came through after the amendment bill, which was passed in December 2017, hence the second set of regulations. They are called regulations in terms of Section 109.1B8, read with Section 97.6. And 94.1 of the Legal Practice Act. Okay, if we could. Regulations 1 and 2, just regulation 1 contains the definition of the Act, and then regulation 2 empowers the ministers to make regulations relating to the manner in which the teachers of law are designated for purposes of the council, as contemplated in Section 171B, and it also provides for the composition of the council in subsection 1B, which includes two teachers of law, one being a dean of a faculty at a university and other being a teacher of law. The regulation 2 provides for the process. Process entails the president of the South African Law Deans Association or the Society of Law Teachers of Southern Africa, as the case may be, must request nominations from ordinary members. The president must then oversee the voting process, which will be done by email, and then the president must draw attention of nominees to the provisions of Section 7.2 of the Act, which provide for representativity. Regulation 3, Section 94.1G, empowers the minister to make regulations relating to the certificate to be issued by the Registrar of the High Court to the effect that an attorney has the right to appear in the High Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, and or the Constitutional Court as contemplated in Section 25.3. Now, this regulation sets out the criteria that the attorney must meet and before they can appear in those courts, and it also deals with how he or she must apply to the Registrar of the Division of the High Court, in which he was admitted and enrolled as an attorney for a prescribed certificate. Regulation 3 also provides that the certificate which a registrar must issue must be in a form that substantially corresponds with Annex A to the regulations, which reflects the full names, ID numbers, the full names and division of the registrar concerned, and the date in which the registrar signs the certificate. And the registrar must also state that he is satisfied, that the applicant has satisfied the requirements of receiving that certificate. When it gets to Regulation 4, it says that Section 94.1H empowers the minister to make regulations relating to the appropriate relevant experience as contemplated in 25B of the Act. Now, 25 of the Act sets out the criteria of an attorney to comply with if he or she wishes to apply to appear in the superior courts, one of which is that he or she must have gained appropriate relevant experience as may be prescribed by the minister. Regulation recognizes the following relevant experience. They must have practiced as an advocate for a continuous period of at least 3 years. They must have been a magistrate for a continuous period of at least 3 years. They must have been a prosecutor for a period of at least 3 years. And that is it. Such regulation 5 empowers the minister to make regulations relating to the manner in which an application is made to court for purposes of section 43A1 and B1. And this section provides for proceedings after disciplinary hearing and sanctions. And subsection 3 provides that the DC community may order a legal practitioner or jurisdiction entity to pay compensation to the complainant, which order is subject to confirmation by an order of any court on application by the counsel. It also provides that the notice to the legal practitioner or the jurisdiction entity consent must be made in accordance with the rules of the magistrate court or of the high court, as the case may be. The usual application procedure will therefore be followed. Regulation 6 empowers the minister to make regulations which relate to the legal practitioner's fidelity fund, and it talks about their investment in government and other securities in which the board can invest surplus funds as contemplated in section 63(1)(a) and section 72(3). It then says that the board may invest monies which are not required for immediate use in government and other securities as may be prescribed by regulation as provided in section 72(3). It also provides that the board must provide the amounts required in the ensuing year for the purposes of meeting the obligations of the fund. It further provides in section 72(3) that any amount determined in terms of subsection 2 that is not immediately required for the purposes of subsection 1 in the financial year must be invested in government and other securities as may be prescribed by the regulation. And Regulation 6 also provides that for government and other securities in which the board can invest surplus funds. The existing regulations of the current Attorney's Fidelity Fund in terms of the Attorney's Act were re-enacted in these regulations, and they remain unchanged in Regulation 6 except for a few technical changes. Regulation 7 then empowers the minister to make regulations in the matters to be included in the annual report submitted to the council and the minister as contemplated in section 75(3)(d), that's still the relating to the legal practitioner's fidelity fund. And it provides that within 1 month of receiving the audited AFS, the board must submit an annual report to the council and the minister. Regulation 7 provides that the board must include in its annual report changes in the composition of the board, if any, details when a member of the board has been removed, and all other aspects included in the regulation. And that is the end. Thank you, Chairperson.
Is this going to be applicable to both attorneys and advocates, or only to, because you are talking of reenactment here?
Okay, the current.
And may you kindly also make mention of those few technical changes?
The Fidelity Fund is currently collects interest, which is collected by attorneys, but as you may be aware that in the Legal Practice Act, there will now be an advocate who practices with the trust. trust account. Yeah, trust account, yes. So the fund will deal with all the money collected.
Sorry, can you note the question?
Yes. But answer all of them. Okay.
When we make laws or regulations, we must always have at the back of our minds knowledge of other laws. Because if we say we want to choose the bar and side bar, we still have requirements that somebody must have practiced as an advocate. In other words, we are not moving forward. Somebody must have been a magistrate. Somebody must have been a prosecutor. In other words, we are casting things in stone, and then we say we'll do this after 3 years. As if after 3 years we'll be there. Those who come after 3 years, they must come with their new agenda. They can't be righting our wrongs. Menzuz. Please, answer.
She's going to answer. Not like this.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Bulma Lauf, Department of Justice. I just want to clarify this inquiry regarding the appropriate legal experience. Section 25 provides that in certain instances an attorney may gain the right to appear in the High Court. This is similar to the current position where attorneys in certain instances may appear in the High Court. Former years, long ago, only advocates were allowed. Now this, the Legal Practice Act opens different avenues for an attorney to be allowed, and this is when he has been practicing for 3 years or is in possession of an LLB, then he can, or he or she can appear in the High Court, or a new avenue has been opened where that attorney has gained previous experience. Say, for example, that person has been a magistrate for at least 3 years. Now that person becomes an attorney. That attorney now doesn't have to work for 3 years as an attorney before he or she can appear in the High Court. He can immediately appear in the High Court if he gets a certificate from the registrar. So it's only opening avenues, opening access to the legal profession, but it doesn't mean that every attorney must now first be an advocate or a magistrate or a prosecutor. It's just opening, and it is, if it can be small consolation to Chair, this is all ways in which there is gently starting to become fusion, which will need a full legislation. But if
it
I can,
this
is a gentle way moving in that direction. I fully agree with Chair. I just want to explain, this is actually an opening up and not a limiting of the position.
Have you answered the appropriation of that conversation?
Yes. To answer on the issue of all the monies that have been that are currently reserves in the law societies, there will, all those monies, there is an agreement that will be signed soon where the monies will be transferred to the LPC for the regulation of the legal practitioners. It will not go to the Fidelity Fund. In terms of the Act, the Fidelity Fund will continue to apportion some money to the Legal Practice Council for the operating of the of the Legal Practice Council. So the monies just go to the LPC as to continue with the regulation.
You can be an attorney holding an LLB degree or a master's degree, and then when you have an LLB, you can be admitted and appear in court tomorrow, and you will not be more experienced than an attorney with a junior degree who has been practicing for 3 years. But because when we do things, they have to be rational. What is the rationality of someone who is more qualified and then he has to have practiced for 3 years, someone who is less qualified, who can appear immediately? So I'm just saying that, please, before you come to us, digest things. And we want radical transformation and not gentle transformation. Yeah, okay. Honorable,
she was still responding.
Yeah, Honorable Nzunza, you have protection of honorable members.
The honourable member here wanted to know where the money will be grabbed with that compensation. It will sort of be like that.
I think I normally disagree with the chair. No, I think I agree fully with the chair as far as the transformation is concerned. this act has been in Parliament for more than 15 years.
The act.
And yet when it comes out, it doesn't satisfy the interests of the majority of the people. It's not transforming. Now, there needs to be a really radical transformation on this matter. I think when I look at it, it's just doing the same thing that used to be done, protecting the same interests. I know the law profession is very, very slow in transforming, general. But now, I think that we need seriously to consider changing these regulations. I don't think they should last long. If they have to, we need to change. We need to find out. For example, the main thing, people want to go to court and make sure that when they are represented by a legal practitioner, they don't keep on changing that. Look here, we have got another legal practitioner now. I'm going to add another one on top of me and charge you and for that, and you've got two or three of them. Secondly, you have the same attorney who has to pay, because now if I'm an attorney, I must make sure that I pay for practicing. This is basically what I mean. Because what was happening is that the attorneys, if there's something wrong, you complain to the law society. The law society will write to the attorney, tell him, look here, that chap is giving you problems. Just explain. You know, there's nothing really that assists the people, ordinary people who are complaining. And that thing is a question of, I must pay. If I don't pay, then I've done nothing wrong, but I have not done the fidelity certificate, and therefore I can't practice. But I must have fidelity certificate all the time. The ADA is to pay the fidelity fund monthly, yearly, to be able to practice. It has very little to do with the interest of the people who are supposed to benefit from the fidelity certificate. If Diff is a rock, he's a bad guy, he can continue as long as he comes up with certificates every year. I'm not sure. I think if this act does not in it try and protect the people from rogue attorneys, it's still the continuation of the same thing. Because a lot of people, for instance, on the RAF, that they get, people will get about 10% and the attorney gets 90%. And there's no protection to by the law society so far.
Mrs. Souza and Mrs. Lowe, Mr. Hank, those of us who are younger usually accuse older people to be more conservative. Now here is an elder statesman who says we need radical transformation. Can you underline that? That from here, this committee wants a radical transformation of the legal system. So when you come to us, anything that you do must be radical. We must accuse you of have gone overboard, but things must be radical. Because as Honorable Mpumulwana says, it's not about ourselves. We want to make justice accessible to the people. And the people cannot wait for crumbs from our table, trickles from the table. People want justice like yesterday. So can we move swiftly and radically to transform this legal system? Do you still have something to add? Okay, honorable members, do you also want to slip over this one? Because.
I'm advised
that this set has not been formally referred to us, so we must pack them. And how you find it right to say things that are interconnected should be brought to us for approval, I fail to understand. Because if they are interconnected, it means they must be simultaneously referred to us. How did you get it right to do it that way? Can you address us?
Chair, it was two different sets of regulations in terms of two different enabling provisions. It wasn't done simultaneously. The first set was sent, I can't remember exactly, I don't have the dates. I think it was in June, it was submitted to Parliament, while the second set was submitted, I think, at the end of July, it was submitted to the Speaker and the Chairperson of the NCLP. But it is two different sets in terms of two different enabling provisions.
The regulations don't submit themselves. They get submitted. The authors of the regulations know that they are interconnected. You must submit them simultaneously, because otherwise you make us to approve half a story and make us... work wrongly. Can we really apply our minds to the work that we do? And because we came back here to Parliament to consider these things, and we cannot be considering half stories. Okay, so
look, now we have wasted time, but we can't take a decision because the things were not properly processed. So let's process things currently on time. Can we move on to the other issue now? It is a criminal procedure.
Chief, excuse me, can we be excused, please?
You see, you are one department, and you can narrow me about
one thing. Why don't you work as a collective? Next time, when that one is sick, in other words, you can't stand in for them. Because in this parliament, we know one ministry. And then if you all get excused one by one, it means you are not even working as a collective. Okay, anyway, you are well excused.
Majority of the right to institute prosecution in respect of the majority of offences lapses after a period of 20 years, except for certain offences, among others murder, robbery if aggravating circumstances were present, child stealing, rape or compelled rape, and offences provided for in the Trafficking Act. Now, with regard to the reference to rape and compelled rape, Mr. Chair, it's important to note that those are penetrative offences, but there are other sexual offences as well, such as sexual assault. Now, what happened in the Liebenstein case in the High Court, the complainants complained about sexual assault or indecent assault that were committed on them more than 20 years ago. When they submitted their complaint, the NPA indicated that they couldn't institute a prosecution because those offences has prescribed, or the right to institute prosecution has prescribed. The High Court declared that provision, or that distinction between penetrative and non-penetrative offences, as irrational and unconstitutional. The case has to be referred to the Constitutional Court for confirmation. But at that stage already, the Minister requested the Department to prepare this bill, because the Minister eventually conceded in the Constitutional Court that Section 18 is unconstitutional insofar as it draws a distinction between penetrative and non-penetrative offences. I might just mention, Mr. Chair, that we were concerned about time, and we have requested we addressed, among others, the Constitutional Court on time, parliamentary time. Usually we get 18 months to effect the necessary amendments. In this case, we were able to receive 24 months. Now, if I could take you quickly to page 3 of my presentation, I could possibly just indicate to you the dates. So on 15 June 2017, the South High Court delivered its judgment, and then on 14 June 2018, the Constitutional Court. So that two-year period, I may just mention, Mr. Chair, has only started running now. So to that extent, we were fortunate in getting this bill in as early as possible. If I could take you quickly to the bill. It's a very short bill, to the extent that it only deals with Section 18. And what it does now is it refers to all sexual offences insofar as the period of the right to institute prosecutions and the prescription thereof. That in short, and I could possibly add, the department will probably recommend one amendment, and that is to the short title of the bill. Although the Constitutional Court's judgment came out after the bill has been introduced into Parliament, the only consequential issue that we will recommend the committee to consider then is to note that the Constitutional Court, and I've quoted the phrase for you on page 3, the Constitutional Court suspended its order for 24 months and determined that the declaration of invalidity is retrospective to 27 April 94. So what we'll probably will have to do, Mr. Chair, is to, when we look at our second clause on page 3 of the bill, to insert the words roughly after 2018 and is deemed to have come into operation on 27 April 94. Mr. Chair, that in short is the bill.
And thank you, Advocator Mr. Hank. Thank you so much. Chairperson, what I would like to know is the retrospectivity impact. So I understand, but does it mean then all those cases which might have happened since 27 April 1994, which is 24 years ago, then they may be cases might be opened in that regard, in terms of this declaration of Section 18 of the Criminal Procedure Act as invalid. But I note the consequential the amendment. I don't have any problem. The clarity seeking question is in relation to this retrospectivity effect, and how it will impact on the on the prosecution part. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. I want the clarity about the 20 years. Is it 20 years, the offense committed within 20 years from its commitment, or even the 20 years, is it a limit that if the offense is committed after 21 years, it's no more considered or not? And secondly, it's about the retrospective effect. I don't know how the Constitutional Court arrived to this retrospective effect to 27 April 1994, because some of the offences happened that time. It will be very hard for a state to prove beyond reasonable doubt for a case of such many, many years ago. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes,
there was a law called the Sobukwe Act to keep Sobukwe in prison. I'm not sure whether this is not a Jordan Act. I have reservations, to be honest with you, Order, about the Constitutional Court really having much powers over Parliament. Strictly speaking, I don't see how you can prove that I was raped 30 years, 50 years ago. And no, people, I don't think, I'm not sure. But anyway, it seems that we have no choice. We just have to rubber stamp what the Constitutional Court says. And I'm not sure what, in other words, even the act, we're going to say it has to be A, B, C in four quarters of what the constitutional law is saying. Is that the position? If this is the position, then we have got problems. Because they are human beings, they can make mistakes like anybody else. If the question of, I don't know. The expectation, I don't know whether I'm just crying over split milk, I don't know. The expectation of the ordinary members of the public, to make it retrospective, really, it is to target the cases that could have come to court then or were declared that they have prescribed. I'm not sure if this is justice, really. Is it the Constitutional Court who says that? I didn't read the judgment. Is that the position? Sorry.
Are we going back to the Sobukwe Clause? Can you address us?
Sobukwe, let me just in brief. Sobukwe was put in prison for 3 years, if I'm not mistaken. And after that, the government then felt that, no, this is too short. He was given 3 years by the court. And then while he's there, the parliament had to make an act to make sure that he keeps on staying in Robben Island.
It means there must be no selective justice. One law for Honorable Mulauzi, another law for Honorable Mpumulwane, and another law for Advocate Hank. The law must be of general application. In short, that's what it means.
Why the court has made its
currently offences such as murder and robbery. So it, the 20-year period, it means that if the offence is not listed and a complaint is brought forward with regard to an offence that is not listed, and a period of 20 years as prescribed since the alleged commission of the offence, then the National Prosecuting Authority does not have the right to include the prosecution. But if the offence is listed and a complaint is laid now with regard to an offence that was committed, for example, 25 years ago, then on page 3, you could see the last words, last few lines from line 25. So in other words, the right to institute the prosecution, except for the listed offences, shall unless some other period is expressly provided for by law, lapse after the expiration of a period of 20 years from the time when the offence was committed. This does not mean necessarily that if the offence is listed and a complaint is laid 30 years after the fact, that the National Prosecuting Authority will automatically institute a prosecution, because it will be the same principle for the prosecution to decide whether they do have a strong case, sufficient evidence, etc., before they decide to institute a prosecution. It just opens the doors with regard to those offences that have an emotional and psychological effect on individuals, on complainants, to be able to come and lay a complaint after a period of 20 years has lapsed from some of the schools.
Yes, I just wanted to find out, did the Constitutional Court said specifically it must be retrospective? Or is it the department that decided to put that retrospective?
The chair, on page 57 of the Ministerial judgment we are referring to, order number 5, the declaration of invalidity is a retrospective to 27 April 1994, and that is the sole reason you will see that the bill that we, or that the minister has introduced in a short title, it only saw that the amendments will be affected to section 18 when the amendment act is eventually implemented. Our recommendation will be is that in view of the order of the court, the amendment act should be brought in line with the judgment of the court in that regard.
So are we satisfied that the proposed amendments will not take us back to other court battles?
Once a decision has been taken not to prosecute, or if a person has been found not guilty, especially in that scenario, prosecution cannot be instituted again. Once the prosecution has issued a certificate, then as far as the National Prosecuting Authority is concerned, this is the end of the matter.
Honorable Mpumulwana.
No, as I said, I'm just crave over split milk. This is becoming very, very serious. In other words, there's no point in us being here, because the judges could just sit here and make the laws the way they want it, and we just rubber stamp what they say. Hey, this is serious. I'll thank you.
Honorable Mouser. Yeah, thanks. I heard you said if the NPA declined to prosecute, that case cannot be again come back to the court. So how about this private prosecution? If you, the NPA issued an only prosecute, and the private, some groups said that they want to open for private prosecution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The possibility is always there, Mr. Chair, but it all depends on a number of factors, among others, the strength of the fact. And I honestly think that if the National Prosecutor Authority does have a strong, presentable case, that case will be taken to court. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Breidenbach.
I have nothing constructive to add except that it's clear that when the National Prosecuting Authority has good, strong cases, sometimes they don't take them to court.
Honorable Mpumulwane, I think the question that you raise is very important, but it goes to the architecture of the Constitution itself. But I think the remedy lies in the fact that we have the power to review the Constitution. Maybe in the exercise of that power, we should address that matter. Otherwise, even the separation of powers would be meaningless if the courts are going to instruct us. And what if the court itself is divided, there's a majority and a minority, we are forced to follow the majority, and there's no higher court which can say the majority was wrong, and so on. So this goes to the fundamentals of our constitutional democracy. But for now, let's abide by the situation as it exists. We must effect the changes, and I think the department has done the work, and we have no choice but to agree. Honorable members, is that how we should conclude the matter? Honorable Breidenbach? Pardon? Honorable Breidenbach, I'm informed by those who know that we accept the right of the parties to go back to their caucus, but that we are not yet there. But now what we need to agree to is to publish the bill. To publish the two bills, and we'll keep your right in mind, and you still have to do that. So what we can do now, with your permission, is to go for lunch, and we agree that now we must publish the bill. And then we have lunch until past 12. You know, I have two bosses here. I have to listen as well. Honorable Mpumulwane?
Yes, it's not my fault. I mean, it's not your fault. But I have a
problem on the state liability. But there's just one point on 2A, and whether I am entitled to go back.
State liability, didn't we say that we're next week, the film is going to be
Maybe before the department left, when are you going to start to prepare the amendments of the NPA Act as per court ruling?
The free for all now.
To be guided, maybe. We get a report on the judgment of the court on the NPA Act, the scope and the nature of the amendments that are desired. Then we deliberate, and then we take a decision. But the bottom line is that we must act as speedily as possible. But as this committee, I think we agree that the architecture of the Constitution allows the President to appoint. And the President has duly appointed the acting National Director of Public Prosecution, that is Advocate Dr. Ramaite, who has been a senior public prosecutor for more than 16 years. He has acted on two occasions and discharged himself very well. And I think we must say, as this committee, unanimously, we support the President in that appointment, and that the issue of amendment of the legislation is a separate issue, but an important issue that we'll deal with speedily. And we thank the President for acting swiftly so that the integrity of the NPP is restored in the interest of the administration of justice. Thank you very much, and there's lunch for at 1:30 we come back. We'll take the Magistrates Commission report and then where is Raja? I think Raja must really issue a statement confirming that the authority of the President of the Republic of South Africa to appoint, and he has duly appointed the acting a qualified person to act, and then as Parliament we will speedily address the issue of the legislation. Thank you very much. Let's enjoy your lunch.
The problem is the public
Just a minute. The department, that's why the department sometimes will think we're unreasonable. Even the previous public protector has agreed that the public protector legislation must be amended. Even the current public protector has agreed. And why is the department not responding to things that have been agreed by the committee? But the department wants us to agree to what the table before us. Mr. Hank, next week when you come back to us, can you tell us when are you bringing amendment? We want to amend the Public Protector Act. Now this is a decision of this committee. We want to amend the Public Protector Act. We want to amend the NPP Act. And next week, come back to us with time frames. And we want to do this work this year. Thank you.